Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Amanda Farrow.
And I'm Michael Footer.
This is a special episode, so we're not going to cover the biggest business beats in the game
This is
industry.
A pretty big business beat, though.
But we're not doing multiple business beats today. We're just doing the one.
We're doing it.
We're doing it. We're doing it live. I know this is such a weird introduction, but I'm like, what could I say? It's a bonus episode. What are we supposed to do here? We didn't write me a script.
It's bonus-tastic.
Anyway, this is bonus episode number one. That's great. I'm really excited about bonus episode number one because we don't want to mess up episode 100. This is all for like our weird internal purposes.
It's our brand new episode zero.
Oh, no. Don't say that. That's the worst. Episode zero is going to haunt us forever. Mm-hmm. We're so smart. We're going to do episode zero. Worst idea we've ever had.
Fingers crossed. I'm very excited about this very first bonus episode.
Bonus episode.
As you may have seen just now, news breaking that Raw Fury has taken a majority investment from Altor. And we are super fortunate to have with us Raw Fury founder Jonas Antonsen to talk about the publisher's new majority investor, Altor, and its future. Jonas, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, guys. It's a true pleasure. And I'm excited for this bonus episode as well. So happy to dig into it.
So first, congratulations. We were very excited to get this news and to read a little bit more about Altor and what your plans are. But we've talked about Raw Fury so much on the show. We're big fans. And I imagine that a lot of our listeners are familiar with Raw Fury. But for those of our listeners who are not as familiar, could you talk to us a little bit about your company's founding and how you have and how you decided that an indie publisher was the way to go?
Your superhero origin story.
There it is.
Yes, I'll try. So Raw Fury was set up and it started back in the very beginning of 2015. And I claim that the birthday of the company is January 6th. That's at least what I put into some documents. And the reason for that is I have a horrible memory when it comes to dates. So I've compounded dates for a long time now. And mm-hmm. January 6th is also my birthday, so it's easy to remember.
that's sadly, all it is. For those of us here in the United States, it sticks out for another reason.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah, my birthday was a very interesting one this year. I would say with all the news happening over there. So to get back on Raw Fury, which is a more pleasant topic probably for everyone, is I've been around in the industry for somewhere around two decades now, closing in on that, right? And I started out so I'm originally from Iceland. I'm Icelandic. So I started out by building a studio in Iceland many, many lifetimes ago, it feels. And I did that. I ran that studio for about 8 years. And we had a bunch of good successes. But then ultimately, there was a small hiccup with the Icelandic banking system. Where all the major banks in Iceland got nationalized in one day or one night, and then somebody.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, it was those were interesting times for sure, and like someone said at some point, never waste a good crisis. And I'd say that going through a period of that teaches you a lot about like when you should actually panic and when things are fine, right? It's a good moment to learn about Zen. So coming out of that with everything that entailed, it was absolutely crazy. And there will be like a bonus episode, I think, talking about the crash in 2008 and how it affected what we were doing then. But like I said, the biggest thing I personally took away from it is, you know, the... the problems with, you know, because every business, every venture, life in general has its ups and downs, and going through something like that, it kind of teaches you that, you know, there are moments where like people usually start to panic and you're like, no, this is fine. This is fine. You know, at least they're not nationalizing the banks, so we're good. Well, yeah, so I did that for like I said, for a couple of years also after the crash, and I kept the company going. Then I did a few years of like executive and board consulting within the space, having clients both in both in Europe and the US. Ultimately ended moving to Sweden, where I currently live, and started working on the publishing side of things. And I had always envisioned putting or setting up a new development studio in Sweden after moving here. But little by little, like both from my own experiences when running a development studio, dealing with publishers and dealing with funding, dealing with like distribution, and then also just, you know, through the consulting work, I worked with developers, I worked with publishers, I worked with, you know, peripheral companies in the industry. And then stepping fully into the publishing side, it just started to dawn on me that, you know, there are a few things here. One is that I just started seeing that, you know, that there have been so many changes and improvements in games, in the landscape when it comes to games and game development and publish and like distribution, all that tools available like Unity, like Unreal opening more and more up, and then, you know, the platforms, digital distribution, all of that. But there was, you know, new platforms, mobile devices, et cetera, et cetera. But there was one area in particular that hadn't really evolved that much, and that was the relationship between publishers and developers. Specifically. And what I mean by that is literally the relationship, like how these two entities interact with each other. And I thought there was room to create something, you know, that had a more human approach and a humane approach and looked at the coexistence of these two entities, a publisher and a developer, as something where the sum would be greater than the parts, where both parties would come together and have aligned goals and wanting to see whatever came out of that cooperation and collaboration as something spectacular. So the publisher should be the biggest fan and the biggest cheerleader for the developers that they work with. And so I wanted to change a lot of things in kind of the soft values of how publishing works, and also make that reflect in everything, like the contract, like how the company talks, how we act. And I've always been a big believer in, you know, actions first and words later, because it's talk is so cheap, and we see it now in the age of social media. It's so easy to, you know, put anything out there and say anything, but you know, talk is cheap, actions are what matters. And I really wanted Raw Fury to be something that would like not sell itself, not like use words to glorify or paint a beautiful picture, but actually do it through repeated actions in the industry. And I think we've been able to do that, and that's, I think, also why we're here today with Altor and this big piece of news, and hopefully, like, you know, I wanted Raw Fury to be a disruptive entity for the industry and especially the independent space in so many ways. Also, like, you know, we've had now the whole controversy surrounding Blizzard, and that's another thing that, you know, it needs to change, and I think that again is a field that, you know, we need to do better, but we need to do it through action and not through Twitter storms, but actually by showing and doing. So that's the long and short of it. Additionally, I also realized that I'm old now, and there are far better young developers out there than this like middle-aged white dude. So I realized that, hey, my days of making games are just, they're over. Like I'm way better as a support unit at this point than a lead, if that makes sense. So yeah,
I love that you're running support class. You're a support main now.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good. Support and tank. I like exactly. that for you.
Yeah.
You just alternate between the two in this industry. It's like you're tanking in 1 minute. Don't worry, I got this, guys. And the next, you're just rah, rah, rah cheerleading. It's perfect.
Yep.
That's really great.
That's the thing I can do right really well right now, or these two roles. Yeah, absolutely.
That's fantastic. Let's talk a little bit about growth. I mean, you all are still a relatively young company. I mean, you've only been around for 6 years. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about growth and how things have changed and evolved, both with regards to the business and with, and if at all, with regards to the internal culture at Raw Fury.
Hmm. Well, I mean, we can start that with when we started out, like when I was talking to close friends in the industry, people that have done well, both in on the business side, but also investing and stuff like that. But all of them thought I was a bit crazy talking about setting up a publisher in 2015. We're like, you know, and what are you gonna, like, free to play mobile or no, premium only, PC and console first, mobile if it makes sense. And they were like, okay, that's interesting. So how much have you been drinking over the past month as you've concocted this mad plan? But I think that you know what ultimately was proven was that there was room for a revival and rejuvenation mm-hmm. within the publishing space. And after us, we've seen some awesome indie publishers come in as well. And I just, absolutely. I love to see it. I love to see, like, you know, I'll name an example, No More Robots, for example, which I love how they operate. Absolutely. And that's just one of many, right? And another example would be all the publishers that are collaborating with us in a project we call the Indie Houses, and we can talk about that also a little later.
Yes, please.
But I think ultimately we got proven right that there was room for change and a room to kind of change how the publishing side was handled and how the relationships were handled and that it made sense and. We've also been incredibly lucky that, you know, I sometimes, you know, we run under a certain principle at Raw Fury. The simple way to put it is, you know, you can work from anywhere at any time you want and in any way you want, as long as you get your shit done. And
I love that results only work environment.
Yeah. And ultimately, I mean, the people that work at Raw Fury have a lot of autonomy. So we have for each game that we work with, there's a publishing cell that takes it on. And those cells are actually like small companies within a larger company. Oh, and neat. It's them that make
that's
the decisions.
Cool.
Yeah. And like, I don't know what's going on half of the time because there is no like hierarchy. There's no need to run things by me or anyone else in the company. The people that are closest to the games are the ones that drive the decision-making from marketing to PR to like release planning to selecting dates, price points, whatever. And they do that in collaboration with the developers. So you know, on one hand, I think it's a very great structure and it's very easy to scale. But on the other, it's also because I'm a little lazy. So it takes like the more we grow, the less I have to do. So I'm actually hoping to become obsolete at just one point. So I'll spend a month.
Please put you out of a job.
Yes, exactly. So I'll spend a month and I'll realize, hey, nobody's bugging me about anything. Like I can just leave.
I just can play video games now. Right.
Exactly.
Score.
More and more times for me to play games again. That's the goal. But we've also just been insanely lucky to have been able to attract incredible people to the company and to this journey. And I think it's because, you know, not only what we say we are, but what we've done resonates with so many people. And great people wanna, you know, we all wanna have meaning. We wanna make meaning. We wanna be a part of something that's great and you feel good about and that you're proud of and in an environment that makes you happy. And that's what we've tried to create. And I think that's why we've been able to attract incredible people. And that has allowed us to grow quickly, because that's the key. You need people that are just amazing and kick ass at what they do and just deliver. I'm in awe of the people that have decided to join on this journey. And that's really the key component, that and the developers that have allowed us to work with them throughout the years, that those are the key components of allowing us to take the next steps towards even further disruption within the space.
It's interesting. One of the things that you mentioned was that in 2015, people looked at you like you had three heads, because you're talking about starting a publisher for premium games on PC and console. That time was so interesting in the industry.
It really
because
was.
We had gone through this period of contraction.
Yeah.
Leading up to that, we lost AA developers in total.
Yeah.
Like they almost, with the loss of THQ, especially, that was kind of like the last nail in the coffin. It's like AA is done.
Mm-hmm.
And then self-publishing kicked open the door for indies, which led to this new growth.
Yeah.
And it's been really interesting to watch that. You mentioned No More Robots. There's Whitethorn. There's there's other publishers that have kind of sprung up. Annapurna's come on the scene. And obviously, you know, one of the things that was interesting, and I think that covering Raw Fury in its early days, was Devolver was really the indie publisher that everybody thought of at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was how are other indie publishers going to define themselves and make a brand for themselves and really stand out, when it seemed like at the time, okay, is this role filled or is there room for growth? And I think that you've done a really good job, especially, you know, since you started and over the past few years, establishing what it means, what Raw Fury is and what Raw Fury stands for. And part of that is that transparency and that disruption that you talked about.
Yeah. And I mean, that's been important to me from the very, very beginning. And you know, in the beginning of this year, we published our publishing agreement, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of jabbed at other publishers to do the same and following the example. Because I mean, transparency is makes everything better, right? If you truly are interested in bettering something for everyone, right, then transparency should be key to that. And the reason we didn't do it earlier was, again, you know, actions speak louder than words, and I wanted to do it when we had enough track record and enough
oomph, it would have an impact.
That it would have an impact, exactly. So that's why we did it. And also, I mean, it's not something we've talked about publicly, because we haven't really done the big numbers reveal how much money the games that we published have made, how many blah blah blah, you know, which people usually do. And again, it's something that we rather do when we feel that it has a moment where it has the maximum impact. But I can tell you that I think every game except two that we've currently published are in the black, and the other two will be in the black.
That's awesome.
That's an amazing track record.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, because now we've published a bunch of games throughout these 6 years. It's a big portfolio at this point. And I'm not saying every game is in the black and is hugely profitable, but we have those cases as well, right? But they're all in the black, and that is what I wanted to create. Like I said, everyone except two, which is a massive hit rate. And what does that mean? It means that, you know, we're able to pay the developers that work with us. They're getting royalties. They're getting revenues out of their games, and that's, you know, it's huge. And that was one of the things I really wanted to achieve was, you know, we don't sign killers and fillers. You're probably familiar mm-hmm. with that terminology,
oh, yes.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
No, I mean, every game we sign, we should sign with the goal of we're signing it because we fucking love it and we want to work with it and we want to see it succeed in any way, shape or form humanly possible, right? If you sign with Raw Fury, you are going to be treated you're going to be treated well. You're not just a filler in a portfolio strategy. You're signed because the people on the other side actually care about what you're making and believe in it.
That's fantastic.
Don't mind me while my heart just melts. I love this.
One of my favorite Raw Fury stories I covered when I was at Game Informer was the story about the Cathy Rain developers. Mm. When the story came out, it was, hey, we're funding them, we're giving them bridge funding, no obligation for them to make their next game with us. We just think it's the right thing to do. And it was this feel good story that I was so delighted to cover because
I remember reading that, point, that story actually.
Well, at that point, there were so few feel good stories about publisher developer relationships. So that made such an impact on me. And it was one of my favorite stories that I ever covered.
It wasn't just done out of some sort of altruism. It was done because, you know, like we wrote in the article, you know, a publisher has patience, right? We have deeper pockets. We have money. Developers don't have that patience. So we knew Cathy Rain was, it was going to break even. It was going to sell well. It's done. It was the second game we published. It's done phenomenally well for us over like, and it keeps selling because it's timeless. Point and click adventures are timeless. And if you look at just the return on investment per game, Cathy Rain has the highest rate of return on investment from our entire portfolio. So it wasn't
to hear it.
Yeah. And it wasn't altruistic. It was, we knew that that game was going to make us a ton of money and it was the right thing to do because, you know, in that situation, make sure the developer lives and lives to see the day when that like return on investment hits their bank accounts as well. Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And do it under like, you know, do it under the same principles that you've been trying to create that collaboration and work together. Do it in the spirit of just be human, be nice, be kind, you know, love your partners, love the people you work with and treat them like people. And that was really kind of the message of that piece. And we've done similar things over the years without necessarily publicizing them or talking about them. But so it's not a one-off, right? We didn't do it as a publishing stuff. We've done it in a number of cases because mm-hmm. I truly believe it's the right thing to do. And if you, because also a developer like Yoel who made Cathy Rain, right? He's a fucking superstar. He's a new injection of awesomeness when it comes to point and click and like the stories, telling stories in that medium. And you know the developers, they just get better and better and better over time.
Absolutely.
So why not make sure that he had the environment to continue to make and not be worried, keep making great stuff. And if he wanted to work with us again, fantastic. But not make it in a way where you know you're kind of pushing like you're coercing someone to do it, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think that's wrong as well. Because making a great game, it takes so much creativity, effort, passion, and you lose that as soon as you start like taking away those sort of like as long as when you start pushing a developer down any sort of path that they don't want to take or make. You know, it's just going to end badly.
Yeah.
We're going to shift gears. Amanda's going to walk us through and walk you through, hopefully, the relationship with Altor. But before we get there, I noticed in the press release that you shared with us, or the blog post that you shared with us, you mentioned Nordisk Games and how they were your former partner. And that they,
oh, I'm excited about this.
That they helped kind of early on and get you ready for where you are now and where you're going. Can you just talk a little bit about the Nordisk relationship before we kind of talk about in depth about the Altor relationship?
Sure. We've been partners with Nordisk for several years now, back to 2018. And all in all, they've been an awesome partner to have. So I think that they're definitely a partner that companies in the Nordic should be talking to and should be pursuing. They have long-term vision. They have great support units, and they certainly were really, really good to work with. But when we took this kind of next step into the journey, you know, ultimately what we wanted to find was a partner that could support all the mad plans that we have, and those are indeed mad, and will. Well, Altor is one of it's one of the biggest private equity funds in the world. It mm-hmm. is one of the best respected private equity firms in the world. And we spent about a year, and we didn't publicize this. We didn't go out like willy-nilly shotgun approach. we spent about a year working with an investment banker that I've known for a long time, really to hone in and find the right partner for the company. And we didn't speak to a lot of people. Like usually when people go out fundraising, right? They go everywhere and they seek for, like, you know, usual. But we really wanted to hone in on a partner that understood what we were trying to, like, what we were all about, how Raw Fury operates, what we're trying to achieve, and wanted to support that, and wanted to support that with, like, you know, the big cannons. and Nordic, as great as they've been, this was a good time for them to, like, they made a great exit on the company. They were, like I said, a great partner, but this was a good time for them. They felt also to kind of transition, because if you look at their portfolio, we were also the only publisher in that portfolio. They mm-hmm. predominantly, like the rest of the portfolio they have is developers, and that's where kind of right. their focus has been. So I think there was also a bit of that, but yeah, it was a good time for them. They there's nothing but good feelings from us or them in all of this, and so it was just a matter of us, and they understood that as well. Like the company wanting to find the best support possible that had the resources to make everything happen that we wanted to happen.
So when you mentioned that you took a long time to really, really nail down the right partner and the right investor for you.
Yeah.
So, and as you mentioned, Altor is considered one of the best private equity firms mm-hmm. in the world. And I mean, we did our research on Altor. That's certainly mm-hmm. not known in the game industry, because this is Altor's first investment in the game industry.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, you know, how that came to fruition and what was your big aha moment with Altor?
Right. So, I mean, we've been, the conversation specifically with them has been ongoing since early spring. So again, a long time. Very early spring, I'd say. Actually, most of this year. There are several aha moments in the journey, and first of all, the people on their side are the people that we've met and worked with over all these months are just incredible individuals as well, and they're very passionate, they're very knowledgeable, and they've spent a lot of time understanding the game space, and actually they've spent a long time researching games and really getting to understand it. So they like way before we started talking, they had spent a whole lot of time really diving into the industry and figuring out where they wanted to go. And they were most fascinated with kind of the independent end of the industry, because that's where the creativity is, that's where the art lives, that's where there's so much room for so much disruption. And if you look at Altor's history, it is originally set up by a guy called Harald Mix. And he comes out of the world of investment banking, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. But his story is interesting, because he comes from a relatively small town in Sweden and kind of, you know, has very kind of humble beginnings. And when he set up Altor, at least my take on it is that he has this disruptive spirit as well. He was going into the private equity world with the goal of disrupting how that world works. So instead of the instead of the classic, like, you know, grab majority, put in the suits, and then go to market,
sell it for parts.
Yeah, exactly. What he wanted to do, and that's what they've consistently done over the years, is they partner with the founders and with the teams. And they look at their vision, they look at their plans, and if, like, just like we do when we look at games, right? And they have the same approach. So they look at they looked at us and went, like, we believe in this journey. We want to be a part of this. And when mm-hmm. they go into a market, they go into a segment, they go in like this. They go in after one company that they think is going to be disruptive and amazing. And that's how they, you know, and then they literally, like, lean in and say, you know, we believe in the people that founded this, the people that are running this, the teams that are there, And that's what they are supporting and running with. And that's a pretty unique approach, I think, to investment, to private equity. Yes. And is absolutely exactly what we wanted to look for, right? Because we didn't also want to end up in a portfolio of companies, right? That like one of many, because that's not the going antithesis. To work for us. Yeah, exactly.
It's the antithesis of everything that Raw Fury stands for.
Yeah.
Because that's not how you treat the developers that you work with. So why would you want that treatment in return?
Exactly. And having someone like Altor on board now, that is, I don't, you probably hear it in my voice. I'm fucking excited.
I'm excited to get to the stuff that you're really excited about, like what this is going to do for the company. But before we get to that, you know, one of the things that I love most about learning about these mergers and acquisitions and investments is getting a full understanding of what it took to get there. You know, like how many other either private equity funds or investors did you speak with before you ended up at Altor? And, you know, I know it took a year to like really cement it, but were there any moments for you where you're like, I don't know, and you had to take a big pause?
Yeah, I mean, several. We didn't have the amount of conversations that people usually have because we try to be very picky. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there were moments where we entered conversations with you know some parties that we were excited about, but then as the conversations kind of went on, that excitement went down. And then there were moments where we went into something and just went like, hold on, this just doesn't, like, this is not going to work. So yeah, I mean, that's a part of the process, right? And you have to remember, like, and this is a good lesson to all, every developer out there as well. And I've said this so many times, one of the actions you can take when there's a contract on the table is also just say no, right? Mm-hmm. It's
powerful.
Yeah, and sometimes we forget, right? Because when there's a contract and you want to start, like you have this feeling of like, oh, this has to get done, but no, maybe it just doesn't have to get done. If it ends up not feeling right, then you know, don't do it.
Exactly.
But I would say the more interesting, like you know, Raw Fury is the fifth company I start. So I would say that like getting to this point of everything that I've poured into and we have poured into Raw Fury is the accumulation of like literally almost 2 decades of just learnings and failings and understanding and pivoting. And you know, the first company, the development studio in Iceland I built, like I did everything by the book. Like I read every business book out there and like, you know, how should you set up your slides? What funds should you use? How many, like blah, 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 blah.
That sounds like my approach to business a lot of the time. It's like, oh, I have to do all the things right. Like, you know, the people that have MBAs do, right? Yeah, no. Yeah, turns out that you don't.
Why are you staring at me?
Throw it out the window.
I'm not staring at you. I'm not staring at you. Not at all.
But yeah, throw it out the window. Because ultimately, and you know, one thing that I learned very quickly was like, you know, when you start thinking about in use words like competition and all that, what are you doing? You can't lead if you're always looking at what others are doing, right? Then you can't really build anything new. You can't lead because you're now benchmarking yourself towards
according to what everybody else expects you to do and what the baseline is in the industry. Yeah. I feel like we're going to be best friends after this.
Love it.
One related question. Were you looking at investments of different sizes or did you go out there thinking, all right, we're looking for someone to really help us carry the ball and be a majority investor?
That was the most important part, was like really find someone that we felt would elevate the journey of Raw Fury. Someone that had the long-term view in terms of how we think about things and wanted to be a part of that. That was the most important thing. Not necessarily the valuation or like blah, 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 but that, sure. Like find the right partner that has the capabilities and access to
and want to kind of join and do this thing properly.
Right. Disrupting more disruptors.
Yes, exactly.
I love that. And speaking of disruptions, you know, you mentioned that, you know, there's new stuff going on at Raw Fury that Altor's investment is going to help support. So let's walk through it. What is this majority investment going to do to ensure that all of your, as you said, mad ideas are going to come to fruition and at the same time still take care of the staff and take care of the developers?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's just to answer last part first is probably it might be the Nordic roots or something, but I've always wanted to make sure that people that are a part of this journey with us, that they have an upside in whatever happens, like in the successes, right? And again, finding Altor, one of the aha moments there was they couldn't agree more. And they helped us create a program that is going to be awesome for everyone at Raw Fury if things go as we hope. And that mattered a lot to me, just finding not just the willingness to do so, but they invested so much time and money into like lawyers, into consultants to make sure that we came up with something that truly was spectacular for everyone at Raw Fury. And it was fun, and it was funny because usually like they work with these sort of programs only for like executives and stuff like that. So it's still called the Management Incentive Program, which and everybody's included in it, but they called it that just so it wouldn't be a discussion point when talking to their investment committee. So they just kept the name on it. It just has It just has an awful lot of managers in it. but that was a moment, and like, you know, they truly understood and understand and agree that the actual capital of a company like Raw Fury is the people that work there, is the developers that we work with, and how you know that needs to be front and center if the success is to continue, that needs to be taken care of. I mean it's just awesome to be able to work with people that kind of share in your values in those regards, and
from a private equity firm, no less.
Yeah,
like yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah, they broke a lot of firsts for me. Like I can tell you right now, and I told them in the like I was skeptical talking to a private like equity firm, but like skepticism all torn away. And I think for me, I hope this is the same feeling that when we start talking to some developers and then start working with them, I hope we have the same effect on them as well, that, you know, that they might be skeptical to begin with, that, you know, is this too good to be true? But then hopefully, you know, we're able to show and not just tell. And so what was the question?
So the other side of that question is what other kinds of programs and projects will this majority investment help support?
Right. So, I mean, to begin with, we have two physical locations at this point. Our headquarters in Sweden, in Stockholm, and then we also have Fury Studios in Croatia, in Zagreb. And from the beginning, we've always wanted to have an impact on the environments that we work in. But larger than that, we've always wanted to have a greater impact on how the industry operates. That's, you know, we kickstarted the Gorilla Collective that last year, right? Mm-hmm. And that whole thing, and it was important to us to like not have that Raw Fury branded or created in a way that it could take on a life of its own. And we got the Mix guys involved with that, and they then took the ball and just ran with it, and it's awesome.
Justin's great.
Yeah,
it was amazing. That whole thing was one of my favorite parts of last summer. And it was one of my favorite parts of this summer, for that matter.
And I'm so proud of having been able to kind of get that off the ground and get it together and see it just live on. And then, you know, we did the Art of Fury this year, and we want to do that on a regular basis. And
And that's kind of the, like, I think games are like, they're vastly recognized now as, you know, it's mass entertainment. It's a medium now, right? It's culturally accepted as everybody plays games, but we're still not over the hump of that final stretch of being recognized as art or an artistic medium. And I think within the industry, sure, but in the general public, no. I think there's still a resonance of Roger Ebert's words that games could never be art, like movies are art, that games are just like entertainment and nothing else. Right? Yeah, they're toys, right? And I think we're still there when it comes to the perception of people that are not within the industry. And I think that is the final hump that we need to go over. And I would love Raw Fury to be a part of spearheading that, getting over that hump. And Art of Fury, the Art of Fury project is one of many kind of aspects of how we want to see that happen and how we want to kind of spearhead that. Because every creative medium has gone through this. It doesn't matter if you're talking about books, movies, you know, music. They all go through this. And all artistic mediums have a duality to them. They can be highly functional or artistic, right? The manual that comes with your new refrigerator uses the same words that, you know, some of the same words or the same language that you know, Hemingway wrote his books in. Other is very functional and not artistic at all. The other is absolutely a piece of art, right? And the same goes with with every other medium, like Mutzak versus actual music. Hotel artworks that exist in every hotel room in the world, right? Versus an actual piece of art with meaning and context and like everything that goes into it. So games are the same. They are an artistic medium, but we have not yet gotten that mass recognition that this is indeed an artistic medium that can carry important messages, can convey and make people feel, and discover themselves even and break through and change. Like, you know, that's what art does. It can change us in a moment. A book can literally change how you perceive the world, how you perceive yourself. The same goes with paintings. The same goes with music. You know, the same goes with movies. And the same goes with games. And you know, the famous words of like, I'm looking forward to play a game that makes me cry. We see that today over and over and over again, right?
Games make me cry literally all the time now.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Like, back, you could not say that for me back in like 2014, 2015. Like, it just, maybe one game in a several years span, or it could be longer than that. I went from like, I think Final Fantasy X, between Final Fantasy X and Journey, I didn't cry at games at all. And then Journey, that was it. I was broken. I cry at games all the time now.
Yeah, I'm the same. And like both with a game called Mosaic and with Call of the Sea, at both Call times I cried when I saw the prototype and I got to play it. Like both of those games just made me bawl. And then when I played Call of the Sea, like the final, like the end result, the game as it exists today, I'm not going to spoil it for anyone, but there are multiple endings, and there's one ending that has a very particular moment, actually happens during the credits. And it just broke me. Like, I broke down and I just cried like a baby. It's an amazing feeling. Yeah, it's an amazing feeling. And I'm super happy and just proud to be able to be some small part of those sort of experiences. So coming back to like Art of Fury is one aspect that we've done. And then we've just recently announced something called the Indie Houses that will also be a partnership. It's a partnership with seven indie publishers. And as we go on, we'll be introducing some pretty cool initiatives through that.
So look for that,
and that's going to include even funding for people that should absolutely have access to it, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to spoil the reveal. But
we'll talk to you again when there's when there's more to talk about there.
Yeah,
and we'll make you laugh again.
Absolutely.
With our very silly bonus episode introduction that we didn't script out, and we're like, whatever, we'll do it live.
Yeah.
I really had to mute while you were going through it. So we have all sorts of those initiatives, and I think what will become the most visible with Alto coming in is that we now have the ability to like sign bigger indie titles with larger budgets, larger timelines, more risky in some ways, right? But also
yes,
So we're very excited about that. We have the ability and to look at games that. Have more kind of a multiplayer service-based long-term component in them and supporting them because that I'm very interested in that sort of space. And again, from kind of the Raw Fury perspective of finding something that's just artsy and quirky and awesome. So that's probably going to be the first very visible. But then there are other parts that will be coming to light probably sooner than you think, where we now have the ability to do things that we've only been dreaming about so far. And again, I want Raw Fury to kind of be the spearhead of disrupting the independent space even further, creating additional opportunities for indie developers for no matter where they are and no matter what region they're in. If it's Africa, South America, Asia, Europe, US, right? And really try to create like a healthy ecosystem that spans the entire horizon of independent games.
I love it.
Yeah. So it's a really big vision with a lot of moving parts.
But it does sound absolutely mad. Yes. But I'm very excited for it.
It is mad, but I think in a very good way. But
agreed.
And it's been my kink since I remember, since I can remember. And when somebody tells me something is mad and I shouldn't do it and it's impossible, that's when I go like,
"Oh, you and Amanda are going to be best friends."
Yeah, we're going to be best friends after this. It's like we're basically the same person. This is entirely my life. I'm like, "Oh, I'm sorry, you told me I can't do this thing. I'm definitely going to do it almost entirely out of spite now."
Yeah, that's how I work as well. I'm gonna jump because I need to fill up my red wine that I'm drinking.
Okay. This is a great place to wrap up. Hang on one sec because we're gonna wrap up here and we're gonna do the outro and then we're good to go.
Cool.
Okay. So
yeah,
I'll just do this. Thank you so much, Jonas, and thank you for listening to this very special bonus episode of the Virtual Economy Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Virtual Econcast. I am at Footerish, FUTTERISH.
And I am at Amanda Farrow, still refusing to spell my username.
One day. What if I told you
how to speak and spell? Hold on.
What if you can't spell? What if?
Excuse you, I write for a living.
I don't know. You said that if somebody says that you can't do something, that you do it.
Wait a second. Nobody asked for this. Wait, no, I literally asked for this. Darn it.
That's what we call the Amanda Paradox. Jonas,
worst.
Where can people find you online?
I'm probably easiest to find at Jay Antonsson on Twitter, and then usually just through anything that has Raw Fury somewhere on it, you can find me probably lurking somewhere in the background of that.
You can subscribe to our RSS feed at virtualeconcast.com. We are also available on all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, and, I always forget that last one, Mike. Pocket Sand everywhere. There it goes. And if, you enjoyed this very special bonus episode of Most Wonderful Conversation, we would love it if you would subscribe and, if possible, review the show. We would love to know what you think. Mike, how else can people let us know what they think and get in touch with us?
You can DM us at Virtual Econcast on Twitter. You can shoot us an email at podcast@fsquared.biz. If you have super secret information that you want to chat with us about, we both have Signal numbers, so just DM Virtual Econcast and we will provide those to you.
Indeed. And we will be back on
Saturday? With our regularly scheduled news show?
With our regularly scheduled news show, because we were off last week because it was my birthday.
Woohoo!
I'm 1 year older. Yay!
I thought you were going to say I'm 1 year old, and I'm like, oh.
Wait, what?
Nope. There's a lot of problems with that belief.
Nope, that's not okay. Well, and on that very awkward note, Remember to wash your hands, stay hydrated, and be good to one another.
We'll see you soon.